Blog Talk Radio.
Launching board for all of us to take note
and to have a massive impact on the children in the community. And I thank you for being vocal about this. So we're for the identity and the confidentiality of the children involved. We're not going to use their real names, but in the blog, you also give them pseudonyms. So we were going to refer to the children as, and what is the name that you assigned to them?
Maria and Luigi.
Maria and Luigi.
Super Mario Brothers, so I thought that that was appropriate. So we're always talking about Mario and Luigi. So.
I love it. So tell us how old Maria and Luigi are.
She is 10 and he is 11.
Okay. So he's the big brother and she's the little sister. So we'll switch it around and say Luigi and Maria. So 11 and 10, but I'm sure if she had something to say about it, it would be if she would beg to differ, I guess.
Yes. It would be more like 10 going on 20.
Okay. So tell us how Maria and Luigi came into your life.
Well, when my mom was 50, I think she had empty nest syndrome, and she had been a foster care mom for a long time and was getting ready to get out of fostering children. So her last charge was a 10-day-old baby boy. And she said, oh, you know, we won't have him for very long. You know, everyone wants to adopt a baby. He's a handsome guy with dimples. So we waited and waited and waited. And on his first birthday, we were giving him his first birthday cake. And I said, gosh, that's funny. He's one and no one adopted him. And she said, oh, I did.
It's like it's a done deal.
Pretty much.
Okay. But she hadn't told the family at all.
No. And I was 28. So
okay.
I was surprised to be getting a little brother who could barely walk.
Wow. Okay. So I'm sure that came as a surprise. And were you living in the home at the time still, or were you out living on your own?
I was actually back and forth between here and New York. I was in culinary school at the time at the CIA. So I was here when the semester, I think it was like 10 weeks on and 2 weeks off or 4 weeks off. So in between, I would be home with the baby.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So she had the baby, and it's like, okay, welcome, big sister.
And then 15 months later, we received a call saying that the same family, the same biological mother, had another child that needed a home, and she was very, very sick. She was a preemie. She was really, really tiny. And so my mom said, well, we probably can't take her, but we would go and support her and visit her in the hospital and feed her, and she had all the tubes, and she was really tiny. And as she finally got bigger and, you know, she could take a bottle and everything, I thought, oh, someone will come and get her. And one day when I came over, she was just there at the house. I said, oh, no, she's done it again.
Well, welcome number two.
Welcome, yeah. And now I was no longer the only girl. Now I had some pretty good attention from a really cute little bundle of joy with a pink hat. So.
So you were just being challenged for a child that you've got some competition now. But it sounds like you developed a very close and positive relationship with your two little siblings that you did not expect.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's great to have a sibling. I think 28 years older, it means you get just about every toy that you want. You have someone to sing karaoke with, someone to help you out. You know, they always know more than their kids because, you know, I'm always teaching things that are years and years ahead of what their kids are doing. You know, any question they want to know, let's look at Wikipedia. Let's look at Google. We'll find the answer together.
Wow, so it was actually kind of fun for you.
So yes,
had your mom had any health problems?
she had had a heart attack, I think, when the youngest was 2. But other than that, she had just always suffered from depression, but she didn't have any physical ailments.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So basically, she was just parenting and doing her thing. You were being big sister and pursuing your goals and interests and popping in and enjoying your role. And so just recently, has it been even 3 months ago now that your mom set leave?
We are coming up on the 3rd month anniversary, or 3 month anniversary, yes.
Okay. So, and that was sudden, unexpected.
Very sudden. It was very unexpected. I spoke to her at 11:30, and she passed away at 1:30. So it was very,
wow.
very unexpected. The same day.
Okay. So I'm sorry for your loss, and no one is prepared really for something like that. But in addition to one, just the emotional loss of your mom, having just to deal with all of the business and the legal aspect of, you know, just getting the funeral arrangements and all of that, which I understand was not a simple task either, a whole series of events have happened as a result. And so for those who are not aware about how the foster care and adoption system works, basically if a child has been in foster care and has been identified as having special needs, there is a subsidy available to the adoptive parent called AAP, which stands for Adoption Assistance Program. So your mom was eligible for that, and actually it's really not the parent that's eligible, it's the child who is eligible. So the children were eligible for adoption assistance subsidies, which helped your mom to be able to take care of them.
Yes.
And then there was the housing department, where she was able to get a larger space for a less amount of money to be able to provide for them a home that they were comfortable and safe in.
Yes.
And all of that was going along. And so what happened when your mom passed? Because I see you outlined it in your blog almost, you know, verbatim. But just to give a summary of what happened as the pieces start to fall apart.
Well, she passed away almost at the end of the month in February. So immediately the next week, I knew that February, you know, has a fewer amount of days. I needed to start notifying people. So I notified the housing authority that she had passed and wanted to find out the procedures for passing on her home to myself and the children so that we could keep them, you know, in their place through the school year, which
mm-hmm.
is nearly now. And they said, sure, no problem. Here, fill out, you know, all the forms and triplicate, give us a few drops of blood and about 52,000 copies. And, you know, it should be fine. So I said, okay. I started working on my 52,000 documents, and it seemed like everything was going fine. And about 2 weeks into it, I received a letter in the mail saying that that would not happen for us after all, and that they would only pay 20 more days of rent. And that just started the whole ball rolling. And in fact, they notified the landlord, who is the person that called me, you know, screaming, really nervous about how they were going to get the other portion of the rent. And I was shocked find out that without the subsidy, our rent would be $2,200 a month, which is quite a bit of money. And then I also called, traced down the social worker that handled the post-adoption for the county for the children to receiving the AAP, because she passed at the end of February, March check came. I thought, oh, this will be really simple. I'll just call them and have them issue the checks in my name. You know, I'll put the money in the bank and, you know, I'll pay the rent and I'll get the food and I'll get the tennis shoes and a few extra uniforms, all the things that the children needed to get to the end of the school year. And I discovered that that wouldn't happen at all, that I didn't qualify, that I would have to legally adopt my brother and sister. And so I said, okay, you know, that seems strange that they'll have the same last name hyphenated twice, but okay, what do I have to do? They said, well, since they're not in foster care, you will have to go through independent adoption. And I said, okay, what do we do? And they said, fill out another 72,000 forms. Oh, and by the way, this costs 46,000. I said per child. Plus there has to be an background investigation. That could cost anywhere from $150 to $300, plus another couple of $100 to do fingerprinting. So now I know why people adopt from China or somewhere else or internationally, because I don't think they have to jump through so many hoops. And the amount that you have to pay is set every year, I believe, by the federal government. So there is a small stipend that can lower it anywhere between, I think, $500 and $1,500, depending on how much money you make, to help you with the adoption fees. So I would have to go through that, go through the home study, go through background checks, all of those things, plus get on a court docket, all before I could get the check.
Wow. Wow.
You pretty much lost everything in a
matter of days. They had been adopted out of the foster care system. They would not go back and redo just what they had and do the certification of your home, because you've been in these children's lives for 10 and 11 years.
Yes, yes. I was there when they were adopted. I'm actually the witness on the adoption papers when we signed at the courthouse. I was actually there.
And no, but they want to take $12,000 just to legally be in their life, and they're already in your heart. And not only do you have to pay, you have everything taken away that would normally go towards providing for them, including a roof over their head.
That's correct. All in a matter of 9 days. She passed away on February 21st. By March 1st, all of this had happened or started to happen. So in a very short period of time, we pretty much lost everything. So I was able to scrape together some of the money to keep us here now, but at $2,200, it's you know, quite a hardship. So
yeah, that's
stay here anymore.
So not only financially, emotionally, mentally, physically, spiritually, that's a hard walk to be in between. But what's even more enraging to me is the attitude of some of the workers that you came in to contact with. And I don't know if you noticed, when I put the notice out, I put social, quote-unquote, services, because the services turned out being anything but a service. What were some of the attitudes that you were faced with?
Very few people say, "I'm sorry for your loss" anymore. I was raised that someone passes, you say my deepest sympathies or offer your condolences, but almost no one said, "I'm sorry for your loss." Everyone always passed over it and immediately gave me attitude. I've been told to get a job. I've been told that people have things happen to them every day, and the first thing that they do is go out and, you know, put their hand out and ask for help. I've been told to just go and get on welfare. That's what it's there for. So I've met a lot of people in social services I thought should work maybe with numbers or accounting. They should switch fields. I was appalled.
Yes.
And
this is
no one had any
services, you know, where they know people are coming from a place of need. And I understand that when you're working in a public agency, you know, there are people who try to come in and scam and use the system, but everybody's human. And you still need to treat people with dignity. And I just, I cringe when I read, you know, some of the comments that you indicated that things were said to you, you know, in your state of acute grief.
I was shocked, too, because you think of social services as being social workers, people who are supposed to help you in your time of need. And I was shocked. And I did want to say for the record that I did have a job when all of this happened. I took a leave of absence to be there for the children, to help plan for the memorial service, to get this all going. I don't think if you've ever had to be in charge when someone passes away, all of the paperwork that has to be done, all the bills that have to be stopped, cell phones need to be found and turned off, things like PG&E, you know, for the children, all of the things to be changed, and, you know, any outstanding bills need to be paid, all of those things. I don't know, finding my mother's birth certificate, finding where her Social Security card is, her passport, all of those things had to be taken care of. And mm-hmm. I took time off to do that. And ultimately, when I did try to return to work, the after-school child care cost was more than what I was making.
Oh, my gosh.
So I was actually at a deficit. So it didn't make any sense to continue traveling all the way to Oakland. I had an amazing job working at a girls' school that I absolutely loved. So I've always worked. So it wasn't like I was just looking for a free ride. I was really just looking for temporary relief, which is what I thought
mm-hmm.
for. I thought that's what we were all paying for. So I definitely felt
mm-hmm.
bamboozled that you hear about all these initiatives being passed and all of these people sitting around on welfare and or getting some sort of handout. You always hear the stories of, oh, I know someone who went down and, you know, they got a check the same day, but I'm beginning to think that those are urban legends.
Hmm. But then we also have people who are adept and have, you know, extreme higher degrees in manipulating the system because that's what they learned to do. And then a lot of it depends on the workers that you get, too. So it really isn't a totally – everybody doesn't start off with the same start. And that's very unfortunate, especially for those of us who are really trying to be honest, trying to be open, trying to be efficient, and people are just shoving paper. So the biggest thing that's happening – is that you now have been given until the 31st of this month to vacate your residence and the residence where these children have lived for more than half their life.
More than half their life. They moved in here when they were just preschool and kindergarten, and now they are third and fifth grade. So,
well, what have they been told, and how are they responding or reacting to that information and to that news?
I have tried to shield them as much as I can, not sharing
mm-hmm.
information. I think that a child's job is to be a child and to learn everything
mm-hmm.
from school. So other than knowing that my mom passed away, that's pretty much all they know. I did tell them that we were going to move, but
okay.
I didn't know where yet, and they wanted to know why. And I said, well, I think, you know, you're getting – you know, ready for middle school, we're going to have to move closer to a new school, and, you know, we're going to miss mom, and maybe we all just need a fresh start.
Mm.
I've left it at. I just don't feel like I should make this their burden. They're so young, they suffered a big loss. So right now, they're pretty much, they're doing their normal stuff, you know, teasing each other, playing basketball. Today, my sister was out drawing the world's biggest hopscotch on the sidewalk over my laptop. Just being normal kids, they're still pretty happy, well-adjusted, and I think that's because they're with me in their own house, in their own room, with their own thing, and, you know, they know me. It's no big deal for me to be at night, or that, you know, they've always spent the night at my house, like every other weekend. We've always gone to the circus or done things together as a family. So I think that's really helped them with their adjustment.
Right. And they are also involved in a grief group for children?
They are. They are. Circle of Care. I believe it's the East Bay Children's Foundation that puts on Circle of Care. So they are in a wonderful peer-to-peer group with other youngsters who have had a sudden loss. So it's specifically for kids who've had a sudden loss, and they go there every other week. It's wonderful. They do everything from play therapy to art therapy, and they can talk about it and not be afraid that everybody else is judging them.
Right.
So I think it's good for them. I think it's been really good for them.
Beautiful, beautiful. So one of the things that you're looking at this point is really where are you going to be after May 31st? And so I have put out information to people in the area in which you live and wish to stay so they can finish up the school year, something, you know, affordable housing or someone who maybe has a home that's large enough, you know, that you can be in so you don't have to be stressed over that part. So that, if anyone there is a real estate agent or is a homeowner or has a space that you could lease or rent to the family, at least through the summer, that would be awesome. If you're listening, please share with anyone and everyone you know.
because for me, we look at the system to do things, and to be honest, I don't have a whole lot of faith in the system, but I have a faith in God, and I have a faith in the fact that we as people really have to pick up the pieces for the system to fail. I don't want to spend time trying to make the system do what it's supposed to do. My thing is to deal with the immediate situation and then go back and deal with the system. So my plea and my summon and my call to the village is let's rise up and be the village, because really the system has been in a place to provide something where there is a lack, and really within God there is no lack. And if we all exercise the gift and share the gift that we have, I don't believe there would be. So my call is always to the village to come forth. However, if there is someone who knows how to get in and crack the code for the system, we definitely welcome your input. Now, the other part, which I know is a little bit more difficult and complicated for you on an emotional level, and I know a lot of people are really trying to encourage you to do something different. But you're very clear that you love the children, you want to be in their life, but you want to remain a sister to them. You want to continue to play the role as a big sister and for them to have a family, some parents who can nurture them and love them and allow you to be continue in the role that they have with you. You want to talk a little bit more about that and what that challenge has been for you?
It was a long and painful decision, one I had actually made before my mother passed away. She had several hospitalizations before she passed away. One ailment or another, her health was definitely in decline. I never thought it was declining so much that she would pass away, but we had begun to talk about what would happen if something happened to her, and her immediate first choice was that she wanted me to care for the children. But after a lot of consideration and thought, I decided that I was not up for that. I'm perfectly capable of having my own children, and I haven't done that yet because I haven't felt ready. I'd also aligned myself to finally return to grad school, something I had tried to do several times in the past, had to give up that dream to help out this family member or that family member or my mom with the same children. So I decided even before she passed that I did not be the primary caregiver for the children, and she said that she would work on finding someone else, but unfortunately that was about 10 days before her passing. So
oh my God.
That there isn't anyone else that she had a chance to speak to. I've told our entire family, and they're either unable, unwilling, or not interested or not qualified to take care of children. So then I've, you know, sent out a letter to, like, just a small close group of friends to find someone, and so far that no one's stepped forward. I am very anxious and very nervous about the idea of returning them to foster care because of a lot of the things I've read and heard about, and they're both very, very sheltered. You know, we talk about PG-13 all the time. You know, my brother always says, but that's only 2 years away from 13. You know, I'm 11. Why not? And I say, well, you know, that's the way it goes. You have to wait until you're 13, like I had to wait until I was 13. So they're very sheltered. They've had a very good life not having to see hardships. These are kids who had their own lemonade stand with the youth entrepreneurship program last summer, and they raised lots and lots of money. And then they took all of their money, and not to buy toys, but they bought things for other foster children.
Aww.
So they're both very big-hearted, very altruistic. They still love to be read to. They're really, really sweet, and I do adore them, but I do not want to be their mother.
Right. And what kind of feedback have you gotten from extended family or friends about that decision?
Yeah, well, it's divided down the middle. We have the old guard and the new guard. The old guard is sort of God doesn't give you more than you can bear. Oh, we're all put here to suffer, and I didn't get to do the things that I wanted to do in my life either. So you should just do this. No matter the pain and suffering, you'll get your reward in heaven. And then you have the new guard who says, whoever said that, that's nowhere in the Bible. This is your life. You have a right to live your life. You know, if you're not ready to be a mother, the worst thing you could do for yourself and these children is to suffer through the next 7 and 8 years until they go to college. It will just kill your spirit. And that's one of the things you're, you know, most known for is, you know, always having a laugh, always being really excited about things.
And so for you, it's not a matter of your abandoning or turning your back on them. You just want to extend their family opportunity and be that consistent person in their life. Because as we all know, you know, the proverb, it takes a village to raise a child, that you wouldn't have a you like your mom had to help you raise them. And I know for myself, having been a single foster adoptive parent, it's no joke. It is no joke. And you've got to have a real close support system to get you through. Now, do the children have any special needs?
Well, she has some learning disabilities. She's a slow reader, but that could pretty much happen to any kid. And he is 2 points away from being on the autism spectrum. So a little bit interesting, a little bit quirky, and a little bit impulsive, but very, very lovable. Both of the children were drug exposed from their original birth mother, but not drug addicted. We never had any problems, no emotional problems. They slept all night, both of them, since they were exposed to the hospital. They fit in perfectly with our family because we're all sleepy over here.
You're all what?
We're all sleepy over here. We all like our sleep. So they fit in perfectly with our family from the beginning. They're big nappers. So even at 11, I can still get them to take a nap. So
I love it. I love it. So what would you say are some of the characteristics that would be needful? One that would be needful and then other that would be desirable for you and being able to feel comfortable with a family that would be wanting to be their forever parents.
What was the first one?
What are some of the characteristics which would be needful, and then what are others that would be desirable for you, for them, for parents?
Well, I guess with any parent, it would need to be someone who's patient. They've suffered a big loss, and then transitioning to family would be a second loss, I think, losing having me. So it would have to be someone who is very patient, very understanding. I would love it if it was someone who maybe had been a former foster child or maybe someone who was adopted. It would be really, really nice to understand what some of those issues might be. They may have. They haven't yet really started to ask about their adopted or biological mother yet. So, and then their own mother, the mother that they've always known, pass away. So definitely someone is going to need to be very, very patient, very, very understanding with them. And I think a desire would be having was adopted or former foster child, parent would be nice.
What about other children in the home? How do you think they would deal with other children being in the home?
Oh, they're both really good. I think they would both be a good big sister and big brother. I tried to set a good example. So they're also very good with kids. I have lots of little cousins and a godson, only 5, and they're both really good. They always hold hands with him and, you know, loves stories to the kindergartners, and he's really good with other kids.
Okay. So those are the things that you feel are definitely a requirement. Now, in terms of your preferences, what would be your preference for someone who would be open to parenting children?
I'm pretty open. I mean, being born and raised in California, I'm not shocked by anything. I'm absolutely open to a family with two moms. I'm open to the family not being African American, that's okay with me. So I don't leave that an idea in mind, just someone who really wants them, who understands that parenting is a long, difficult job that doesn't just end, you know, when kids go to bed at night. So someone who's into wanting to love them.
Okay. And does it matter if they're single or if it's a couple?
Absolutely, I'm open to a single. I was a single parent or a couple. I was raised by a single mom, and I'm no worse for wear, so I'm absolutely open to a single mom.
Right. What about any religious affiliation or even geographic? I'm pretty sure. So I don't know.
I would prefer them to be in California so that I could get to them, I guess, I don't know, close enough so that I could drive. But if an amazing family came up for them that was not in California, I would absolutely be open to that, as long as they understand that this would be an open adoption and that I would be there at Christmas and I'd want to visit them during the holidays and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. Very good. So anyone is listening to this, as I stated to you when we spoke, I am not a family finding agency, but having had extensive experience as an adoption social worker and being an organization that is, our job is to make sure that children have a sense of acceptance and belonging. This is definitely something that we're willing to work with you on without having to pay $4,000. And, you know, and just going through that whole process, because it will be, it's a very sensitive process. And even for, you know, the emotional preparation, just the screening of families, the transitioning, all of that will take time. And I know that your goal is to perhaps start this when school is out, so they will have the summer months to sort of get used to the idea and get to know someone, and perhaps maybe in the fall be able to move forward. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct.
Okay. So, again, I say to our listeners, and especially, and then the other thing we still have to deal with is this whole issue with the AAP. You know, that is just madness to me, because my understanding is that the AAP is for the needs of the child, not the family. So wherever these children go, there should be, that should follow them. So if there's anyone with any legal expertise, I would really greatly welcome your input on this. If you are involved at any level and with the Adoption Assistance Program, we'd appreciate your contact with us, and again with the housing. And if you know of a family that's looking for the opportunity to be a parent and to make a difference in the life, in the heart of a child, and also to have an older daughter, I would love to be able to. One of the benefits I felt that I had, my adoption with my oldest son was an open adoption, and I feel like that was probably the best thing that happened to me, because I got great aunties, and I don't even know what the relationship is. Actually, my son's biological grandmother, we're actually close to the same age. And I said, well, you're too old to be my mom. Okay. She said, we'll just be sisters. I said, won't that confuse our son, my son? But I think for people who are hesitant about opening up, especially when the kids get to be adolescent age, I think that's probably one of the best things that can happen, because for me, as a single parent, not coming from a large family, I feel that I actually got family. So I would think that anyone taking the children in would actually have the benefit of having an adult daughter, because we never get too old to need that support ourselves, because, as I said to you in an email, my whole thing is about nurturing the child as well as the inner child in all of us. And so when you get through having to play the total role of an adult, your inner child can be nurtured as well.
And I am not scheduled to think about this once it's all over. I really haven't had the opportunity to have all of this sink in. Just yesterday, someone came by to give me an Avon book, and I said, oh, great, I'll give it to my mom. Mm. And I just, you know, words just sort of fell out and sort of landed on the porch because it still isn't real for me yet.
Mm-hmm.
I just sort of
mm-hmm.
get through the day, get, you know, do everything for the children, but I know I'll have to deal with this at some point. It just can't be now.
Right, right. But it's really important that you take little pieces here and there, because in a lot of ways you're still in shock and you've gone in survival mode, and at the same time the healing has to take place. So when you have the responsibility of taking care of everything and everybody else, you feel like you can't shift gears. And generally the fear is that if I shift gears or switch sides, I won't make it back. But you have a resilience, even just from what I know about your life story in general, you will. So trust that. Just trust that. And the other question that I was asking about any religious preference that you have or affiliation for the children, for a family.
I am pretty open to any religion, but they have been raised Christian, Baptist, and
mm-hmm.
they are familiar with church on Sunday. They both. My sister loves to sing in the children's choir, and my brother
mm-hmm.
is an usher. He has been an usher even when they didn't want him to usher, since he could walk. So,
oh my gosh!
Yes, he's quite the helper. You got a fan even if it was, you know, raining in 40. So he was going to give you a fan whether you wanted it or not.
So where's that child when I
need him? Yes. He was passing the fan and the collection plate with those little tiny white gloves on. He could walk. So they both really enjoy the church experience. They love Sunday school, and they love to participate in, you know, all the different programs that they have at church, whether it's the Black History
mm-hmm.
Month program or, you know, Easter play. Both of them are readily involved and very happy to attend church on Sunday.
Oh, let's see, you keep talking. You're going to make me feel like my wheels are turning. It was like, okay, I'm supposed to be retiring now.
They
but I'll be a god mommy. I'll be a god mommy. And, you know, and that's the other thing that I was thinking of, too, that I know with my first two godchildren that it really was that godparent role when I knew them as infants, and all their understanding always was that if something happened to the parent, I would take on that role, you know, but now they're adults. And I've taken on the role as godparents of children, but just really in name only. But I think that's something that our community, our village, really needs to take more seriously, because things are happening just across the board. And even without the parent having to go away or pass or something, we still need to have that backup. We need that support system. And everybody needs extended family. And when my godmother passed, I was 40, and I had a tantrum. And I called a lady who had been one of my teachers in church when I was a little girl, like 5 years old, and I called her and told her, you know, I'm not even asking you. I'm appointing you as my godmother. And this is at 40 years of age. And today, this is my godmother, and she actually is going to be 89 this year, and I can't keep up with her. It's like, you know, where are you when I need her? Oh, sweetheart, I'm going here, and I'll be back. But knowing that she's there and knowing that she can appeal to that inner child in me, it's just, it's precious. It's precious.
I actually had a godmother growing up as you know, a young woman, and she always bought me great birthday gifts. And just through the years, we sort of lost touch. And when she opened the paper and saw that my mother passed, she was so alarmed, and it was on the same day of service, she couldn't get here. Called all these people, so she got the number, and she did contact me and said, I am still her godmother. And I have to tell you, it was this amazing feeling for her to find me. She hasn't seen me since I was 20 or when I graduated from college. And she said, you know, I will be there for you. She said, I cannot take the kids. My health isn't well.
but I can be there for you. Don't be to call. My grandmother did appear.
I love it. The fairy godmother. Wow. So is there anything else you would like to share with our listeners? Any insight, any appeals, any questions, any advice?
That's the reason I started the blog. Some people said, well, why, you know, you're so exposed, why are you telling everybody this? And the reason I named the blog A Portrait of an American Family is because this could happen to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone, a parent or, you know, be appointed, you know, even if you're a godmother taking over, there's so much that has to be done when someone passes away. People just don't realize. I mean, my mom left a fully stocked 3-bedroom, 2-bath house with a family room, a double car garage, and let me tell you, it is filled. All of that is taken care of by someone. So not only do you have to deal with your grief, but you become CEO of your own operation. And if you aren't that, I've worked in the corporate world for 18 years, if you aren't that organized or ready to go into survival mode, there needs to be a blueprint for you. So I'm not just for me, while it is very therapeutic for me and support I've received on the blog is amazing, but it's a roadmap, a blueprint for any other person who finds themselves in my situation. I'm trying to leave as few resources and information that I can from help because you have to fight. I never imagined I'd have to fight much. I feel like I'm in for the fight of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to help someone else if they find themselves in the situation. So there's a resources page on the blog that I constantly update with new phone numbers and information. Recently, someone sent me 17 steps to becoming homeless.
What was the last thing that you said?
17 steps to becoming homeless.
Oh,
so I'm still reading that, and I've actually said, you know, I don't know how this is going to end, but I should follow some of these steps. And so the first thing I did is renewed my P.O. box, renewed my
mm-hmm.
gym membership, because those are great. You know, having an address is important, and
mm-hmm.
having a place to have a warm shower, which I can't even begin to imagine what it would be like to be homeless with 2 children, but I figure we still have 17 days, and I'm faithful that something will happen for us.
Yes, yes. Well, as I've said to many of my young people I've worked with, as well as adults who've gone through difficult times, if push comes to shove, I always have at least 4 space, and I have 2 bathrooms. So I'm not going to let someone just be out there, but I know someone has even more space. But it gives us a whole different perspective when we look at the situations that have brought people to that place, and we really all are, you know, just a step away from that place, you know. And an example of even just that feeling, even just being locked outside the house and not being able to get in and don't have your phone and can't get anywhere, just even for those few moments, that's just a very unsettling experience. So when we think about even being faced with so many days we're not sure where we're going to be, we need some reassurance. We need some reassurance. So what I am asking for those who are listening to this message, if it's okay with you, is for them to contact our office, and then we'll forward on the information and, you know, do the screening and pass that on to you. But our phone number is area code 707-553-1971. Our email address is heart, H-E-A-R-T, at forachildheart.org. And that's forachildsheart.org. Now, as you're talking about the things that we outlined most with someone who has some expertise in how to deal with the aspects of the AAP, we talked about housing, and then we talked about family.
But do you still need help and assistance, like with movers and trucks and things like that?
To be honest, I'm just sort of winging it day by day. I'm really hoping that something will happen and we'll be able to stay here for another month. But other
okay.
than that, we are having garage sales every weekend, you know, selling the things so that we can try to stay here for one more month and just so that we can downsize so that if someone does have something for us, like a one-bedroom, which will be absolutely fine with me, we won't have so many heavy furniture items to move, so it should be less expensive.
Okay.
So, I'm just trying to figure out how I'm going to send the kids to summer camp so that they won't have to deal with all of this day in and day out. They can go run and play and be themselves.
Okay.
Something I'm looking
so is that, a matter of finances?
That is a matter of finances. I have a
scholarship. If someone wanted to sponsor the children, what is the cost for the summer session per child? Or do you have that information?
$300 a week, roughly. And that
okay.
is only half day. And we're really interested in the YMCA in Richmond. Hilltop.
Okay. Okay. Actually, I might have a resource for you there. And actually, I already contacted that person, but I'm going to actually put a call through for that aspect. The other thing, so if with the finances, basically they're not saying you just have to be out. If you can pay the $2,200, you can stay there another month or two, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so you need finances. So contributions towards rent would be more than helpful.
Absolutely, they would be more than helpful.
Okay, okay. You know, for some reason I didn't quite get that. So I'm glad that you made that clear, because I'm just automatically in the next phase. So there is the possibility of you staying there with the appropriate financial needs met. So
yes.
We have now from May, today is what, the 15th. So
yes.
Actually we have 14, 15, 16 days left. Okay. I believe that anything is possible. So with that, I've got a whole new perspective to look at that from as well. So I just appreciate your being open and sharing this, because I'm sure you're not alone in this. And I really believe that everything that we go through, especially the most challenging things, are things that are part of our calling to give back to the community. The things that I dealt with as a foster parent and adoptive parent have definitely enabled me to be more, I believe, effective in the work that I do, and would never have thought that pain and that fear and that challenges all would have actually turned out to be something positive. So I would really, if others are listening to this and have similar experiences, give us a call. Send us an email, because that means that there's an area that definitely needs to be taken a closer look at and need some repairs or some modification or to be something needs to happen. And I know that there's someone out there that can handle that. There's got to be. So the thing is, when we network and we share information, we might not have to have it, but we definitely may know someone who does. And with all of our connections, it's just a matter of opening our mouths. Opening our mouths, they say a closed mouth doesn't get fed. So, yeah, yes, and a squeaky wheel, yeah, like a, what is it? A squeaky wheel is the one that gets the oil
or the
tension or something. Yeah. So we're going to squeak, we're going to open, and we're actually going to be doing something about it. You know, as a friend of mine says, don't just think about it, be about it. So I am definitely with you on this, and as I stated, the quote I found last week says, I may not be able to solve all your problems, but you won't have to go through it alone. So, and that you can count on. So, believe it or not, our hour is winding down. We have less than 6 minutes left, and I'm checking to see if anyone in the chat room has any questions, and no one has asked. So, the new part about our program is that this goes into archives. And so people can come back and listen to this call. And actually, if there's some way for you to put it on your blog and you would like to, you're more than welcome to use this. And I will actually be putting your blog, actually I posted your blog in this announcement. I will be putting it in other places. And now that I'm winding out down a bit after this weekend, I will be doing more phone calls and, you know, face-to-face connections to do, because even though I am pretty much glued to my computer and email and all those little vices, not everyone else is. So people do phone calls and face-to-face. I do emails. But this is time to get out and get things moving. You will definitely hear from me. And for those who are listening, also Ms. Monique is considering, and I believe she is probably close to making a definite decision, that she will be a guest on our television program. I know that, you know, you want to protect the identity of the children and showing, you know, who you are, exposes them to some amount, but we'll work with that, because this is something that the community, the village, the state, the nation, and the world needs to hear. So I thank you for all of the love and the caring that you've given to these children thus far in their lives, and, you know, you've given a new meaning to Big Sisters, and that's a role that I value very much, being the sister of a special needs young lady, and my only sibling. So I know how special and that relationship is and how important it is. So thank you so much for entrusting me and the village with your story, with your information, and we're going to provide you all the support that we can.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're more than welcome. So for everyone listening, thank you for doing something special for a child's heart. And actually, I just looked at the thing. We have a caller. Let me see if someone wants to have something to say. Hold on.
Okay.
If I can get them out of mute.
Hello?
Welcome to Heart Talk with Ms. E. Thank you for calling us. Would you like to share something with our caller this evening, with our guest?
Yes, the guest knows who I am. I'm her friend. This is Anne Jamile. Hi, Monique.
Hi there.
Oh, and I don't think I was supposed to say your name. I'm sorry.
We just know her as Monique, that's all.
Okay, good. No, I was just calling to say that, and I've said this to her before, but I think it needs to be said again, that I think just one of these things that she has gone through in the past 3 months would have knocked me out. And I wouldn't have been able to survive. And there's such a long list of awful things that have happened, and people who have not been that understanding and who've been downright mean, on top of just all the emotional things that you have to deal with. And any one of those things, I probably wouldn't have survived. And I just have to say to my friend that, you know, just wow. What else can you say
yeah.
but wow that she's still moving through it, you know? So I guess just making that public, my adoration of you in this situation, because I really, and I'm not just saying that, I couldn't have done this, and it's just a miracle that not only are you doing this, but you're doing it pretty damn well. If I didn't say so myself. So
with much
class,
much elegance. And you know
yes.
what? Sometimes things come in our lives and we discover the true power of the human spirit, because there's so many things that we said we can't, but everything that we are faced to do, we're generally equipped to it. It's just us recognizing it and not even stopping to think, just doing it, really. And so that's
yeah.
the power that comes from within. So I thank you for sharing that with us, and thank you for calling.
Yes, all right. Have a good evening.
Okay, you too.
Thank you.
And that is so important to realize that when we face challenges, and we all look at someone, and I know that you're somewhat uncomfortable with that, you know, with the compliment, because you feel like, you know, well, I'm just doing, you know, what I need to do. But I like what she said, it's how you're doing it. And, you know, there is an eloquence and an elegance and a grace in what you're doing it, and the compassion definitely comes through. And you might feel like, you know, you're panicking on the inside, but on the outside, you're just going with a lot of poise and a lot of grace. And I know the other thing I wanted to comment on, and I'm not sure what your thoughts were about my email when you talked about, I know with the first Mother's Day are usually very difficult, but in addition to that, you made the comment that you did not feel, in my words, worthy of the Mother's Day greetings and congratulations and gifts that you received. And I'm just curious to know, what was your thought about my response to that?
I actually had several other people say the same thing, and I'm a firm believer in, you know, if one person says you look like a horse, then, you know, you can deny it. Second person says you look like a horse, mirror. If a third person says you look like a horse, well, you just look like a horse. So I decided to take it all in, and I guess I agree. Don't have to give birth to someone to actually be their mother, and I guess I am, you know, acting in protection and, you know, everything that a mother does. I'm caring to them. I read to them. I do everything that my mothers have done and everything I can think of on top of that to do for them. So I guess it's okay to enjoy my card. I guess an executive from Hallmark is not going to jump out from behind the door and get the card. Which was, you know, I felt really, you know, nervous. Like, I really like this card, but, you know.
Right. And so people will know that I didn't say you look like a horse. What I told them that the title and the role of a mother is not just for a mother, and it's not only a noun, it's a verb. So you have been mothering them, even if you want the title of a mother or not. And that's what we need in the village. We need to love, nurture, and mother our children. So if you don't want the title, just accept the fact that you are doing the do. You are doing it in action. You have been mothering them all along, and it's okay for someone to acknowledge your caring and your actions. And if you don't want to be called mother, we won't call you mother, but I'll just say thank you for mothering, nurturing, and loving our children. So, and you are fulfilling all of those roles. And the word that you used, what was the word that you used to say that you felt like you didn't deserve?
I said I felt like I was an imposter.
Yeah, and I said imposters are really the people who give birth to them and then jump up and who've never mothered and then jump into life and want to be acknowledged and called mother. Those are the real imposters. So don't get me started on that one. That's a whole other radio program.
Okay.
So I thank you for our caller who called in. Thank you so much, Monique. And I will definitely, we're on a mission. We're on a mission. And my heart goes out to you and what you're doing, and I believe that this is actually going to make an impact on not only Maria and Luigi, but on so many other children. So thank you, take care, and God bless.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. And I got so carried away, I did away with our studio. Here's our closing song. Good night. Take care.
Heavenly Mother, crying, these children are dying at the hand of the other child. I know her heart is breaking, feel the earth is shaking, that rivers flow from the tears she cries, she cries.